Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, I'm not expecting you guys to care about Colorado's Rockies news, but I do think you guys will find this interesting. The Rockies fired their hitting coach today. They have been struggling. They have made a decision in the first 3 weeks of the season, we're not doing this anymore. They have now named Clint Hurdle. If you're a baseball person, you certainly know who that is. They have named him hitting coach for the remainder of the season. The Rockies have gotten off to a rocky start. Now, if you look at their offense, it is better than the Royals. I mean, across the board. Now, I understand ballpark, all that difference. I think we can all understand that. They are hitting a higher batting average than Kansas City. They have a higher OBP, a higher slugging percentage, a higher OPS. They have more hits in fewer games at fewer at-bats, more home runs, more RBIs. The Rockies' offense is better than the Royals. They have already made the decision, this is not good enough. We need to fire our hitting coach. Now, I'm not saying that all the Royals' offensive problems are one person's problem alone. They certainly have a lot of other problems, and the Rockies are a far worse team than the Royals are. The Rockies are 3-15. They're terrible. They're the worst team in baseball. I do wonder if the Royals are having internal conversations about that, because at least for me, this is not an early season problem. This has been a problem dating back to last year. It was a problem in the postseason. It has been their biggest problem through the early part of this season. And how long are the Royals willing to continue to do this without seeing some changes and without seeing some results in what they are doing? And what is usually the first domino to fall? Well, you can hand the public MJ Melendez, you can hand them Hunter Renfro, or one thing that you usually can do is change the hitting voice. We see teams do this all the time. We see this happen in football where you change the play caller. At some point, the Royals early is going to expire, and we need to do something about this, and I don't think they're that far away from it. In fact, I think they're 2 weeks away from it. I don't think the Royals are going to continue to do what they've been doing for another month or so. I think they are giving this the rest of this home road trip, possibly the next homestand when the schedule lightens up a little bit. And if they continue to do what they are doing, I think some changes are in line. I saw this stat earlier today. I can't remember exactly who put it out there, but shout out to them. The Royals have gone now 12 consecutive games scoring four or less run. Their franchise record is 19. So they might do better. They might do worse. Who knows how it is going to go? But we are talking about almost a 2 week stretch where this offense has struggled to get to three runs and they have not scored more than four. How much longer are the Royals willing to tolerate this? How much longer are they willing to do this? And now seeing it around baseball, everybody does not have the it's early stance. Some teams albeit in a different position than you are in, have already pressed the panic button and have already determined who the culprit is for some of their problems, and they have determined that that is the hitting coach.
So I get where you're coming from, and I understand the logic. I think the Royals are going to be more patient than the Rockies, but with most teams in baseball when it comes to their hitting coach, because as I read the release on Twitter that the Rockies have fired their hitting coach, they hired special assistant to the GM and former major league manager Clint Hurdle to do it. You know what that sounds like to me? Remember the Royals fired their hitting coach? They brought in George Brett, because why not? That's how it sounds to me. The Rockies are a team that they're not hitting. They're doing nothing well. Let's bring in a guy that we think highly of, is in the organization. He's well-regarded. Let's see if he, for a year, can get it right, and then we'll reset and find a new full-time hitting coach in October of next year, because the Rockies are not going to the playoffs. The Royals are in a different space to me. I'm not saying they're a lock to make the playoffs. You got to win more games than they have been to be a playoff team, but they're not as out of it as the Rockies are. The Rockies are 3-15.
They're terrible.
Me and you have more wins than them in Major League Baseball. They're bad. I think the Royals are going to be patient. I don't know if they're going to be super duper patient. I don't know if it's going to be July 1st, this team can't hit, and we're going to say, well, the hitting coach has to stay. But I think you're going to be having these hitting coach conversations closer to middle of May, Memorial Day, before the Royals eject, because there is no ready-made, oh, you fire him and then this guy will fix the problem. It is an off-season problem. The Rockies are just going to tape it together, because who cares about what happens that rest of the year?
No, and maybe you're right. I'm looking at their lineup right now, and their lineup for today. Game, we're off at 4:30 today. It's India, Witt Jr., Pasquantino, Perez, Massey, Garcia, Biggio, Waters, and Kyle Isbell. The plan is just to keep trotting out this same lineup day after day, and just one day we will wake up and the problems will be fixed. Is that the expectation? Because they have not hit at any point this season so far. And if you're telling me, hey, the patience is going to be, hey, we're going to give this a couple more weeks, we're going to see if it's going to happen, cool, that's what we've been doing so far. But what is going to be the change to shake this thing up? And I think it just... I really think this conversation with the Royals depends on what you see their starting point as. And I think there's some people that see their starting point dating back to last year and looking at this as a September and April problem, or people that are just looking at this as you're only looking at the first 3 weeks of the season. I can't tell you if you are right or wrong on this thing, but their offense has been in this rut for quite some time. And if the plan is keep chipping away, eventually things will turn around. Well, all right, cool. When are we setting the date to where something needs to happen in this offense? Are we giving it another month? Are we giving it another 2 weeks? I think ultimately the Royals are the only people that can answer that question. But they got to figure out some way to score more than what they are doing. They have to figure that out.
I agree with that. I also wonder, and maybe this is wrong by me to think, how much of this is a hitting coach problem and how much of this is just, you know, a talent problem? Because you're right. Some people are going to say this was it as dated back to last year. Why is it not fixed situation? I also tell you that before the Vinny injury last year, the offense was good. Same hitting coach, same lineup. So something changed. Did they all just get worse? Did they get cold outside? I don't know. But it's not like I'll pick on Kevin Biggio. It's not like Kevin Biggio was in Toronto and he was hitting 375 and was, you know, an all-star and wow, he just was tearing the cover off the ball. And then he showed up in Kansas City and suddenly he can't hit. He couldn't really hit there. He can't really hit here. Sometimes you take a risk on a player like that and you hope to, you know, get a little more out of them. You're not going to make them from quadruple A player to all-star. I think some of the Royals' problems and the bottom of their lineup problems are talent problems. Hunter Renfroe is probably going to be out of baseball in 3-4 months. He starts on your team pretty consistently. That's not a hitting coach isn't getting through to him situation. That's a Hunter Renfroe doesn't have it anymore situation. So the Royals offensive problems, I think, are more than just a hitting coach away. It could be the hitting coach. It could be the players responding to the hitting coach. It could be outside factors. It could be their pressing. It could be there's a dozen different things. I think the Rockies are so bad, they have to give you someone. I don't know the Royals are at that level yet that they're so, so bad.
I hear what you're saying is, I would say whoever's been working for MJ Melendez, maybe you should stop talking to him. Maybe you should stop talking to him. This is a very talented player who just a couple of years ago, we looked at his tools and felt like there was some promise there. All offseason, they told us they fixed this problem. We worked on his swing. We fixed it. We fixed it. We fixed it. He has 50 at-bats so far this season. He has one RBI, and it was on a solo home run that he hit. He's hitting .085. So I hear what you're saying. Again, I'm not here to put all of the problems with the Royals offense on one person. It is not one hitting coach. It's not MJ Melendez. It's not Hunter Renfroe. Do you trust the person that you have in charge to help get you out of this rut? Because what it sounds like to me, and maybe this is a cynical way of looking at it, is we just got to sit around and wait for Vinny Pasquantino and Salvador Perez to figure this thing out. We don't have any solutions to curing the problem other than that. That sounds like we've been saying that for 2 weeks now. Well, when Salvi going to hit? When Vinny's going to hit? We don't trust that anybody else in this lineup can hit. We just have to sit and wait around for those two guys to hit. So, okay, if that's what we're doing, I'm cool with that plan. Salvi's not hitting his normal. Neither is Vinny Pasquantino. Those two guys are hitting around 200 right now and not really driving in runs and not really driving the ball for you. But it would go a whole lot easier and putting those guys in positions where they can drive runs if you could shore up some of the things that you have from 5 through 9 in the order, because they appear to be lost at that stage. They appear to be lost. This team at no point has looked like a functional offense at any point this season, and I don't think it really shown you a lot of signs that they are close to turning it around. But it's baseball. It takes one day. You go out there today, you score 13 runs, and now you start to build some momentum, and you really start to pick up on it. But maybe where you and I are a little bit different is, I think the situation's a little bit more dire than you. It's not a code red. I don't even think it's like a bright orange. They've been like this offensively now for dating back to last year for about 60 games when it comes to their offense. We are talking about a pretty prolonged period of you not trusting or knowing if this team can score 3 or 4 runs consistently. 12 straight games. They're close to the franchise record of doing that, and we have seen some bad Royals offenses in our day. There's too much talent on this team for them to be as bad as they've been offensively for as long as they've been offensively. We got Jay Binkley coming up in studio coming up in about an hour or so. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, I want to do this. Let's talk a little bit of college. We'll also get back to the Chiefs in the NFL draft. Indulge me for just a little bit. Now, I will admit that I have been on a little bit of a crusade, that I've been banging the drum, that the way that college sports is currently operating, this is not a sustainable long-term model, and we need to work together to find a better model. I'm going to play some audio for you here coming up in just a bit. But before we do that, Rob, I bet you did not know this. In fact, I don't know if any of you knew this. Did you guys know that the player of the year in every mid-major has transferred this offseason? They have either transferred this offseason or graduated and are out of eligibility. Think about that. The best player in the Atlantic 10, the best player in the Missouri Valley, the best player in the AAC. Every mid-major player of the year, after their season, entered the transfer portal and have now moved up to the next level. So all March, when we were talking about, well, what killed Cinderella? Why are there no upsets? Because if you have a good player and they are at Tulsa, there is no chance for you to keep them that next season. If you have a good player and they play for Norfolk State or VCU, or you pick the mid-major program that you've heard of, Colorado State, whatever program you've heard of, if you have that caliber of player, you have a 0% chance at retaining that player. And is that a model that we want to continue to have, where you can never build anything if you are a mid-major under the current system? If you are a college basketball coach and a kid falls through the cracks and the big schools don't recruit him, and man, you do everything you're supposed to do. You go to all his high school games, you text, you recruit him, and you give him the attention that North Carolina and Duke and none of those schools are willing to give him. You give him a scholarship offer, the first D1 scholarship offer. You turn him into a really productive player. That player will leave you the first chance he can. And a school's going to come in and offer him more money, a bigger opportunity, and you have no chance at retaining that player. And is that a system that we want to continue? Now, I have been banging this drum, and maybe you agree, maybe you disagree, but people that know far more about this than me are telling us how we can fix this. Here's Jay Billis.
The NCAA used to die on the hill of amateurism in court. Now they're dying on the employment hill. They can't be employees. We can't have them as employees. Don't understand that, because students are employees at every school in the country in different capacities, non-athlete students. But if they would just sign the players to contracts, if you don't want to collectively bargain, if you collectively bargain right with the players, you can certainly do all the things that the NBA or the NFL do with salary caps, because you're in a partnership with players. But if you don't want to do that, all you have to do is sign them to a contract. But the NCAA won't allow that right now. So you negotiate with a player. If you were recruiting me, which you would never do again after the first time, but if you were recruiting me, you'd say, hey, we're willing to offer you a 3-year deal with an option for a fourth. If you get arrested, we get to terminate. It's mandatory class attendance. You have to do this, this, and this. And there's going to be a buyout in there. We negotiate the amount of the buyout. So if I wanted to leave, go somewhere else, I'd have to pay the buyout, or my new school would have to pay the buyout. It's pretty simple. It's really not that big of a deal.
I don't know if there is a better advocate for college basketball and or the college athlete than Jay Billis. Some of the problems that we have in college sports could be fixed if we just treated them more like employees, and you could sign an employee to a contract. And that doesn't mean that every single kid is going to stay. Of course not. Coaches move on and take better opportunities. So do the players. And that's perfectly fine. It would put the mid-major school in a much better position if, instead of what happens now, is Kansas can just come take your best player. North Carolina can just come take your best player. Well, at least you got to break them off a little compensation, and now you can use that compensation to build your athletic structure and give yourself a more viable chance of competing on this landscape. But what we allow to have happen now is, with no rules, that the big schools can just come in and take all of the resources from the smaller school and leave the smaller school with nothing. And some of this, not all of it, some of it could be fixed if we just simply stop denying what is true. These athletes are employees of the university. They come to these universities to work for them. And some students go to work in the administration's department. Some go work in another department. These students choose to come work for them in the athletic department. Well, then make them employees. And let's create a structure in which it's viable, in which it works. But we don't seem to really have too much interest in doing that. We had an NIL lawyer on the show, and he is emphatic. The NCAA doesn't want to do what seems like a very obvious fix to me.
They do not want college athletes right now to be considered employees. They think it's going to cost too much, and they're worried about some of the other sports not being able to afford them. So they're still actively fighting against that, and are actually asking Congress to pass a law right now that says college athletes cannot be employees. So that's kind of the wild card in this whole situation. So we'll see what happens there. But, I'm on the same page with you. I think at the highest level, college football and basketball and probably some other sports too, the athletes are professional athletes and they're professional sports. And we have models that work to manage those sports like you have in the NFL and the NBA. So I think that's where things will eventually get to. It's just a matter of how long until people do determine that, all right, let's pursue that model because we think that's how it's going to work.
We allowed the NCAA for generations to tell us that the athletes had no value and that a scholarship was enough. And then eventually a change happened and they were unprepared for it. That same thing is happening again. Are we going to allow the NCAA to continue to be part of the problem or active in trying to find the solution? I love college sports. I imagine many of you also love college sports. It is a lot of good things. It is a lot of meaningful things. Like most other entities, it is also some bad things. And in those bad things, the NCAA can either continue to fight against it and try to solve some of them, or they can continue to sit on their hands and act like there is not a fire that's going on inside college athletics. But a fire is happening right now, and they are doing absolutely nothing to try to help put that fire out. Every mid-major player that won Player of the Year has transferred out and has gone up to a higher level. Every single one. And is that what we want college basketball to be? At this point, they're not mid-majors anymore. We got to start looking at it like this. There is a major league club, and then there is single A, double A, and triple A. That's how it is right now. And at least in the minor league system, they're all working together. The A, the double A, and the triple A club, they're all under the same roof. They're all under the same umbrella. You can send guys up and down. That ain't how it is right now. Hey, we're not recruiting high school kids. We'll let you recruit the high school kids. We don't want to do that work anymore. We'll just let the kid get really good. He'll average 17. He'll shoot 42% from three, and then we'll come recruit him and we'll take him from you. I don't think that's what we want college basketball to be, but that is where we currently sit with college basketball. All right, let's move on from that. Let's get back to the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's get back to talking about the NFL draft. Brett Veach met with the media earlier today. Here's what he said the goal is this offseason regarding Trey Smith.
We get that done. I mean, there's no lack of interest or will or desire on our end. And we did have, Pete, a ton of talk with Torrey and Jimmy, his agent. His agents at the combine, those conversations continue on to the owners meetings. And so now also CAA has a ton of draft prospects and they have a ton going on. So, you know, we've exchanged multiple phone calls, multiple emails. And, you know, my guess is once the draft's over and our focus is back on taking care of the players that are here and trying to get those guys locked up and CAA on their end. I mean, they have, again, they're one of the leading agencies in regards to the players they produce every year. So I'm sure once things settles down on both ends, we'll be in a position to continue this dialogue and hopefully make some progress there. But there's no secret there. We'd like to get Trey locked up.
Do you think they get Trey locked up this offseason? I know that we have to deal with the NFL draft, and that is the bigger thing because it's right here in front of us, and I'm not naive enough to think that they are reaching a long-term extension with Trey Smith next Wednesday. I don't think there's really a reason to. What are you creating cap space for? There's no reason to create cap space during that period. But I would say this offseason, it's not just looking at it through a one-year vacuum. It's the next two-year vacuum. And how you handle Trey Smith and what's your negotiating power there, which opens you up and gives you the cap space to also look ahead and take care of some of your other issues is really, really important in how they want to do this. I think the Chiefs have the ability to not reach an extension with Trey Smith this offseason. They really do have the ability to do it. They're not in any danger of losing Trent McDuffie this offseason. They're not in the danger of losing George Karloftis this offseason. What we're really talking about is time. And every day that you don't sign Trent McDuffie, you run the risk of the price going up. And can you live with that price going up? The price right now is probably, what, $30 million a year? I mean, that's what we just saw Derek Stingley get. It's around $30 million. I mean, whenever you really sat down at the computer and really try to get this done, what used to be $30 million might be $35 million. Players are not getting cheaper in the NFL at those positions. They're getting more expensive. If you think you got a 24, 25-year-old corner, the number is only going up. If you think you have a very talented pass rusher like George Karlaftis, the number is only going up. And do you want to try to reach that contract before the number increases, or are you willing to wait and you're willing to pay a little bit more a year from now when your salary cap situation could be drastically different?
So to answer your first question, I do think they get a Trey Smith deal done. Eventually. I think it'll be probably like June, July. I don't think there's any rush on either side to get a deal done. The Chiefs know they have him locked up, and Trey Smith knows I'm getting paid this amount no matter what. But before we take the next step here, if they don't get Trey Smith done to a long-term deal, I will be very frustrated back here. I don't know that it's five-alarm fire, but it will be a very heated frustration if they cannot get Trey Smith on a long-term deal. Now, I don't know what the long-term deal is going to look like. I don't know the logistics of what, but I'll tell you this. If we are going into St. Joe and we're leaving St. Joe and we're headed to week one, whoever they play, wherever they play, it could be Brazil. If the Chiefs are boarding a plane for Brazil and Trey Smith is playing on the franchise tag, that is a cataclysmic error by the organization. So I think we'll get something done. So there's no reason to bring that up, but I just wanted that on the record that would be a major problem. I think they will get something done. I also think they're going to get one of those two guys done long-term this offseason. When Brett Veach was at his best, like as far as extending players, he was always ahead of the curve. They got Mahomes done early. They got Travis Kelce done early. The first time with Chris Jones, they got Chris. Remember that summer 2020? They were getting everyone locked up, and they were getting everyone locked up early. They were checking every box. And then, you know, there's a Super Bowl tax, whatever it is, they started getting behind the eight ball with getting extensions done. I think this offseason, at some point, they get Trey Smith done, and I think we also get the ESPN alert, whatever, either Karlaftis or McDuffie also got done, because I think the organization is smart enough to know they don't want to be behind the eight ball again, because you end up paying a higher premium for a Nick Bolton to Trey Smith, and they see, let's get one of them knocked out now and get ahead of it.
Why do you think, and I'd love to ask Brett Veach this question. I wish we had gotten Veach this year instead of when we got Andy Reid. I wish we had gotten the other way around. Why do you think the Chiefs aren't more proactive in getting these deals done, and in a lot of ways, they have been reactive in getting these deals done? I mean, they were reactive, I would say, when it came to Orlando Brown's contract. They were reactive when it came to Chris Jones' deal, and they let the Chris Jones deal get really, really bad. Bad to the point where he sat out a regular season game when eventually you just paid him. Like, we can now go back and forth, and maybe you think that Chris Jones was wrong. Maybe you think that the agents were wrong. Maybe you think the Chiefs are wrong. In the end, Chris Jones got exactly what he wanted. He wanted a long-term extension that made him the highest paid player, and he wanted to also stay on the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, we could have skipped all the shenanigans if they were going to do that from the very, very beginning. If you knew as an organization that you wanted to pay Trey Smith, why are we now, well, he's under the franchise tag, and now we have to do this. If you know you want to pay Trent McDuffie, if you know you want to pay George Karlaftis, why do they usually take it to the final hour, or you're negotiating based off of the franchise tag and not based off directly what his rookie deal is? I just wonder why they choose to handle their contract extensions that way. Now, they've been proactive with one player, and that has helped them in a lot of ways. They're very proactive with Patrick Mahomes. And part of why we can even have these conversations is because their contract negotiation with Mahomes was so unique and so forward-thinking, it has allowed them to kind of handle some of these other situations the way that they've handled them. But franchise tagging your right guard is not a great financial decision. The Chiefs do a lot of really good things. Putting your right guard on a $20-something million franchise tag is not great cap management. For all the love that we shower on Brett Veach, this is not the way that most teams would handle their right guard, especially when he came out today and said, we need to handle our right guard and then we'll handle our very talented cornerback and defensive lineman. you got this thing all backwards. If that's the order that we're doing this thing is, Trent McDuffie should have been priority number one, and then we'll see where we go from there. That's how I would have handled it.
I don't know the answer. You're right. I would have loved to ask Brett Veach. And you know, even if we had Brett Veach for a one-on-one, I don't think he was going to say, yeah, you know, here was the deal. You know, we screwed up X, Y, and Z. I don't think that was going to happen. But they are still kind of proactive with some people. It just seems like they're not like, I don't know what the difference is here. Because remember, it may have been July, maybe in August, they got Creed Humphrey locked up. They took their center. They took the quarterback of their offensive line. They identified he was a guy they wanted to keep long term. And before going into the final year of his deal, they made him the highest paid center in the NFL. They saw the long term vision. They saw the idea. We don't want to be up against the clock with Creed Humphrey. They did it. They did everything me and you were asking them to do. But then they were unable to do it with Trey Smith and Nick Bolton. Like, what was different? Is it just the agents? Is it the money? Is it the you were hoping for the raised cap? So I don't know the answer, but there are times where Brett Veach and co, they see it. They know what everyone knows. Get ahead of it. There are other times where I know they know that, and yet they find themselves in the 11th hour. Like, I know Nick Bolton didn't get super duper money, but you know where he would have been cheaper? Last offseason. That's when to get that done, but they didn't get it done. They got Creed Humphrey done and Harrison Butker done. Something is not clicking. Maybe it's the agents. I don't know, but there has got to be a reason why they're late with some and early with others.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say just for an exercise. And I think you and I are maybe the biggest proponents of a positional value than anybody. Like, I don't think the text line cares about it the way that you and I care about it. That's perfectly fine. I mean, right now, their right guard is the fourth highest paid player on their team. He's the fourth highest paid player on their team. If you were going off right now what their cap hit is heading into the season, Patrick Mahomes has the largest cap hit, which is obvious. Juwan Taylor is number two. Chris Jones is number three. Travis Kelce is number five. And then Trey Smith is number four. I mean, right now, if you're looking at their cap situation, I don't want to make it seem like they are in salary cap hell. They're not in salary cap hell. A right tackle that we all think is overpaid, a right guard, and a tight end that everyone thinks this is his last final year. It ain't a great allocation of the funds that they have right now. It's not ideal. And that's why, at least for me, I view this draft as, I look at this draft as an ability to move forward and what I think their focus should really be. Their focus should be in dynamic skill position players under the age of 25 and young, impactful pieces on their defense that they are moving forward, and this is the future of our defense. This is the future of our defense. And if they think that Nick Bolton's part of their future, they obviously do, they just paid him, great. The future of their defense then should be on all three levels. George Karlaftis, Nick Bolton, and McDuffie. We have a very talented, under 27-year-old, we think Pro Bowl, all pro caliber player at all three levels. And that's how we are building this team. That's how I think that their salary cap and how I think the resources should be allocated. And let's see this offseason and how they handle their draft. Let's see if that's how they, if that's kind of how they get their books in order, so to speak.
I think I will be fascinated by what goes on after this offseason because they got linebacker lined up. They got right guard lined up. Me and you, and you're right, I think we're the only people that care. Their next wave of contracts are all positions that are more important than what they've done. Like, maybe, I don't know, you don't think Karlaftis is that kind of guy, you'll walk on him. Trent McDuffie is that dude. Maybe you don't think Jalen Watson's that guy, but he's in their corner who's going to be coming up soon. Joshua Williams, maybe you don't think he's that guy. He's in their corner who will be coming up soon, like, Felix has not lived up to the hype, but he also plays a premium position. Like, maybe Jalen Moore isn't the answer at left tackle. You might have left tackle, right tackle, corner, DN to get figured out next offseason. That's a nightmare position to be in. You don't have to be chasing the biggest ticket items. You want to go to an offseason saying, hey, we need to find a linebacker, a safety, and, you know, a backup tight end. The Chiefs might not have that situation, so they need to get Trey Smith done and then get ahead of the curve on the next couple guys.
I think the best way to maybe sum this up is, and we can wrap this conversation up. I think the best way to sum this up is, right now, and I understand this is before they reach an extension with Trey Smith, more of their cap space is allocated for Juwan Taylor and Trey Smith than for Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. more of their cap space is locked up. Juwan Taylor almost counts for 10% of their salary cap. Juwan Taylor. And right now, Trey Smith accounts for about 8.5%. If you add that up, they spend more on their cap than their starting quarterback and their number one offensive playmaker position. I think their cap is a little bit off based on how I think they should be building their roster. And we'll see this offseason if they can kind of get that back in line. There's nothing they can do about Juwan Taylor. You just got to take your medicine for this year. You are not restructuring. You're not moving money around. You got to get through this year with him. You get that contract off the books, and now you spread that money. Hopefully, you spread it to a corner. Hopefully, you spread it to a DN. Hopefully, you spread that towards paying a wide receiver and trying to strengthen those options. That's what I think they need to do with the cap. Coming up on the other side, you know what? I never thought I would say this, but I actually miss an argument that we used to have. We'll talk about it next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
For the first time in a long time, I'm willing to dream that this can be a special season for the Missouri Tigers.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
We got Bink set to join us coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Really excited to talk to Bink about the draft. He's going to join us more next week, but we're just kind of getting ready. We are 1 week away from round one of the draft. You know what I determined? Even though we argue about it, you know what would have made this offseason a little bit more fun? And maybe the draft will allow us to have this player. We don't have that one player that we're all debating right now with the Chiefs. We usually have it. Jody Fortson, for example. You know, you guys were really high on Jody Fortson and believed in Jody Fortson. And we don't have that guy this year. I kind of miss it. The reason I was thinking of this is, you know, the Cody and Gold garage sale. They do this every year where they just accumulate these random trinkets. And I was getting ready for the show, and Cody came up to me and said, look at this. And I'm like, all right, cool. What is it? He handed me an official Chiefs helmet. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. What is it? Like, why is it special? Like, look who signed it. It was Larice Reese-Zammit. Now, I know, text line, you're all going to make it seem like you never believed, but I was here. I remember there were a lot of you thought the Chiefs were smarter than everybody else. Oh, my goodness. They got this rugby player. This was an untapped resource the Chiefs had figured out. He was going to factor in. You thought he was going to be like Travis Hunter. It was great. It was kind of fun having that. We don't have it anymore. You remember those little training camp videos with Justin Ross? I mean, if there is no player in Chiefs history that looked better with no pads on than Justin Ross. Those 2 years, and then there was one offseason, the Chiefs, they even knew about it. They were giving you slow motion 4K training camp, mini camp videos. He was on the sideline looking like Julio Jones and DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, it used to be fun. We don't have that right now. Who's the Deneric Prince of this team? Do we have a Deneric Prince? Do we have a Darwin Thompson that gets everybody excited? You know what I really want to come from this draft? What I really want is, I want them to draft a sixth-round running back. I want them to draft a sixth-round running back that we've heard of before. And I want all of us to rally around this one individual. That's what makes me feel alive as a sports talk host. Rob, they're not giving me any of that. Who's that guy right now on the team? That guy used to be Carson Steele. He fumbled that one time. Y'all was ready to get rid of Carson Steele. He's not around anymore. I mean, I know he's on the team, but he might as well not be on the team. We haven't talked about Carson Steele in 7 months. Can we get that guy back on the Chiefs? Can we get that guy back onto the show? Because we need that guy onto the show. They don't have him right now, and that kind of disappoints me a little bit.
To be fair, what makes it even better is when Chiefs fans fall in love with LRZ or Jody Fortson or, you know, Justin Ross, this show stands as a beacon in the light of settle down. And people get mad at
us every time.
And it's so, it's
every time.
It brings me, they don't need to draft anyone. They need an undrafted free agent who plays the position they need. It could be offense or defense. Go get you know, Alabama's fourth string edge rusher. And let the text line tell me that he played at Bama and he's about to become something you've never seen before. And then I say he couldn't play at Bama. Why do you think he's going to play in the league? And people get mad. That's one of the cornerstones of this show.
You know what, though? This is what I've determined. I'm not going to do that this year. That person will emerge at some point. I didn't do that last year for Carson Steele. You remember
on the Carson Steele
bandwagon. I was one of the people that were arguing for Carson Steele.
You were part of the mob that was wrong. People were telling me, Rob, I don't know if you've seen him run, but he's basically 1,000-yard back at Ball State. He's nothing.
Yeah, no, I liked it. I liked that. I was a fan of it. That's what I want him to do. Somebody said, what about Tyquan Thornton? Nah, he's already played for other teams. Y'all not going to get excited about Tyquan Thornton. Y'all not going to get excited about him. He's just way too far down the depth chart. Like, no, way too far down it. That's what I want, though. That's what I'm cheering for. I will say, man, you guys, it's way too early with the Royals. That man Carson Steele, he fumbled that one time. Y'all, get his ass out of here. It was fun with Carson Steele up until that point. He had the long hair. He was Crocky J. And, man, we loved it. We loved it. Not no more, though, man. It's sad, so... We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I would certainly love it. I would certainly love it if it happens. Someone said, what about Noah Gray? You know what? The text line was really excited about Noah Gray, and I actually think that was really good. I actually thought that was the Noah Gray thing made sense to me. You guys don't shoot 0% from the field. You guys get some guys right.
I mean, sure. they were right about Pacheco.
100%. No, I will say that. The text line
and
Chiefs Twitter was very high on Isaiah Pacheco, and they were 100% right. 100% right. Yeah, draft Chiefs Twitter in the draft, they get things right too. No, 100%. Coming up, speaking of the draft, very excited to be joined in studio by Jay Binkley. We'll get his thoughts on this. We'll get his thoughts about what we heard from Brett Veach earlier today. We'll also go through his mock draft. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.